Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. It has been an emotional week in Boston sports, beginning with David Ortiz. Authorities in the Dominican Republic have arrested six people in connection with Sunday's shooting there of the Red Sox legend. One of the suspects is believed to be the same man who's wanted by Pennsylvania authorities on a charge of attempted homicide. Authorities are still investigating possible motives in the Ortiz shooting. Boston Globe reporter Maria Kramer has been following this story. She's going to join us now from the Globe. Hello, Maria.
Hi.
Hi. Maria, you just came back from the Dominican Republic, and I think you're in touch with your colleague Amy Ortiz, who's there now. Could you bring us up on the latest? What do we know?
Yes. So this this pool of suspects is just getting bigger and bigger. There are now, we've just learned, two inmates who have been questioned or being questioned in connection with the shooting of David Ortiz. So this is just adding to the list of suspects that police say are involved in, were involved in this coordinated attack on essentially the most beloved sports figure in the Dominican Republic.
There are a lot of rumors and theories swirling out there. What do we actually know about the why, Maria? Have the authorities said anything about that?
No, we know nothing about the why. And as you said, there are so many rumors swirling, some very salacious, some, you know, and it's, you can't go into any of them because you don't know what's going to turn out to be true. A lot of information has gone out to the public that has had to be taken back. So you have to be very careful with what you're hearing from sources and even sources that you trust. The motive has not been revealed. And I think people are frustrated. They want to know, why would somebody do this to someone so beloved?
There's been, you've given us some information about the suspects. That list seems to be growing. Is there anything else about the suspects who have been arrested that we should know about or that is important to understand for some context here?
Yes. I mean, Amy Ortiz, as you said, is in the Dominican Republic now, and she has been going to the neighborhoods where some of these suspects are from. These are very poor neighborhoods, and getting people to talk there has been difficult. People have been very nervous, scared to talk about these suspects. And so we don't know very much about them right now, except that they come from very poor neighborhoods, and the people there are quite frightened to talk about what's been going on. We do know that the suspects who were apprehended yesterday, or whose names were released to the public yesterday, I should say, will be going before a judge today at some point in the evening. And there are reporters standing by, including Amy Ortiz, who are waiting for these men to be brought before a judge and formally charged.
Maria, you mentioned how beloved Big Papi is both here and in the Dominican Republic. They love him in his home country. A lot of people are wondering why not only somebody would want to do this to him, but how were they able to do it? It was brazen. You know, I read there were officers nearby when the shooting happened. Is there something about law enforcement in the Dominican Republic, or lack thereof, that would embolden people to be this brazen?
I think that that's a really good question. That's one of the things that people are examining right now. That's one of the questions that you have a lot of people in, on the streets of the Dominican Republic asking themselves. If he's not safe, if a figure like you know, Big Papi, like David Ortiz, isn't safe in this country, then what hope is there for us? Others, of course, are saying, please keep this in perspective. You know, this is a country that really thrives on tourism, and they don't want to scare people off. It's a beautiful country. You know, Americans are especially they're especially worried about the American perception of the country because they rely so much on tourism from the United States, and so they want people to keep perspective. This was not a random attack. Is what the police have been saying.
Well, there's been some controversy, or there's been some concern about safety and security after a series of mysterious deaths of tourists in the Dominican Republic. Is that right?
Correct. Yes, you've had tourists dying in you know nice hotels and in touristy parts of the country. So the attack on David Ortiz, you know, at a popular nightclub in a section of the city where a lot of celebrities like to hang out, that's the last thing the people of the Dominican Republic needed.
Yeah. Now David Ortiz is still in the hospital at Mass General. Can you give us an update on how he's doing?
He remains, he remains hospitalized, and he's doing well. Those are the reports we keep hearing, that he's very lively. You know, the big personality that we know of Big Papi is shining through. The people who are going to visit keep telling us. So he seems to be recovering quite well. It looks like the doctors in the Dominican Republic did a fantastic job addressing the very, very, very serious wounds that he received from the bullet. I mean, he sustained quite a lot of damage to some important organs, and so the recovery is going to be long, but people are optimistic that he's going to be okay and he's going to recover.
Yeah, and that is a really important physical recovery. I think a lot of fans are also just worried about him. He loves to be out in public. He loves to be connected to his communities. Is this going to change that for him? He's a truly public figure in the truest sense of that word.
Right, correct. In Boston and in the Dominican Republic, I think that's one of the reasons why he's so popular. You know, he's out there. He's out there with the people. And his father was actually asked that at one of the earlier press conferences. This was just after Big Papi was transferred from Boston from Santo Domingo to Boston. Do you think that your son is going to keep going out in the public? And his father said, you know, that's how my son has always been. He has friends from a long time ago that he likes to be with and likes to go out with. And as much as I don't want him out there, I can't stop that side of my son. But we'll see. This is a very big scare that he's gotten. So, it's a very traumatizing event. We'll see how this affects him in the long run.
Yeah. Boston Globe reporter Maria Kramer, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Let's turn now to WBUR Sports and Society reporter Shira Springer. Shira, thanks for coming in after a long night.
Thanks for having me.
Shira, let's continue with David Ortiz for a minute and give us, if you would, your first reaction to the latest news and what we heard from Maria just now.
Yeah, I think the salient things that Maria talked about were, you know, we've gone from will he be okay? Will he live, quite frankly, to what the heck happened here? And it is a bit frustrating with all of these rumors that are circulating and not knowing and the information that comes out and then is retracted. And I think, you know, fans of Big Papi and just the population in general are going to maybe have to deal with the fact that we may never know why there was this targeted hit against such a beloved sports figure, as Maria said, the most beloved sports figure in the Dominican Republic. And then I think the other question, which is a little less important in some ways, is what kind of Big Papi comes out of this? Is he going to be the same guy that we know and love and who has been out and about and just it seems almost everywhere in Boston with charities and at the ballpark and just really not only a face of the Red Sox, but a face of the city in some ways. And is he going to be that same guy? Again, less important question than why was he targeted and how is his health going to be long term? But I think something will really be missing if we don't get that same, if that's not part of the full recovery.
Yeah. And as he recovers, of course, I hope he'll and his family will take sort of comfort in knowing city's going to love him no matter what.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there have been regular updates from the Red Sox, and Tiffany Ortiz, his wife, has put out those updates through the Red Sox. And in each of them, she thanks the fans for the support. And there's a real recognition that this city is behind him and sort of willing him to a full recovery.
Yeah, so we're going to continue to watch this story as it evolves. We love our athletes.
Mm-hmm.
We also love our teams.
Mm-hmm.
And it's time to talk about one of our teams. I don't think we can avoid it any longer. Last night was
as much as we'd like to avoid it, I think.
It was another massive heartbreak in Boston sports last night.
Yeah.
For the first time in their history, the St. Louis Blues are the Stanley Cup champions.
It hurts. Fans are reeling from this 4-1 Bruins loss in Game 7, Stanley Cup. Tell us what's on your mind. You were there.
Yeah, I mean, it was just tough. It was absolutely tough to watch. I mean, it starts out in the first period and, you know, the Bruins look good. They're the dominant team. They're aggressive. Not only, you know, are they aggressive, but they're, you know, they have more shot attempts. I think they finished the first period, it was 22-8 in shot attempts in favor of Boston. So early on in the first period, he was like, okay, they're ready for this big moment. And then, of course, as we all know, those two goals in the first period, the last one coming with 8 seconds left in the first period, and that just was a real momentum killer.
Yeah, it was. Morning Edition senior newswriter Sarah Rose Brenner talked to us about that and what that felt like.
The first 13 to 15 minutes, I was like, the Bruins are going to get a few pass. They have so much pressure. They look amazing. They look great. And then the Blues scored and everything. It was like, you know, when you pop a balloon and you hear the like slow hiss of all the air escaping, that's what it felt like. It felt like all the air went out of the team. It went out of the garden. The fans never got back into it. And I watched the whole thing, and it was awful.
So what happened? I mean, we've heard the team wasn't playing at its best, but what happened?
I think, you know, first of all, you have to look at rookie goalie, you know, the Blues rookie goalie, Jordan Binnington. I mean, he was phenomenal. I think there was a frustration on the part of the Bruins. As I mentioned, they were out shooting the Blues by a significant margin, and they weren't getting anything past Binnington. So that frustration is building throughout the first period. And then you have those two goals. And I think, you know, after the first one, you're saying, okay, maybe you can get back there. You know, I mean, it's a one-goal deficit. But then again, that was the killer at the end of the first period. Alex Pietrangelo, captain of the Blues, and it just was like, whoa, with Binnington playing the way he's playing, we're not getting anything past him, and now we've got a two-goal deficit. And I think that really was a killer. And then I think you thought, all right, you know, there's an intermission. They can regroup. Maybe Patrice Bergeron said, you know, has another phenomenal pep talk, you know, in the middle of the game, and they're going to pull things together. And then to, I think, everyone's astonishment in the garden, they came out flat in the second. It was like they were almost overwhelmed by the moment and overwhelmed by the deficit. And this resilient team that we had seen all season just wasn't there. It was a shadow of what we had seen earlier. And I think that's part of what was so disappointing about this loss was that, you know, it's one thing if you come out in a game seven winner take all and you play your best, you feel you've left it all out on the ice. And I think clearly that wasn't the case for the players. I mean, that was certainly the impression I got in the locker room afterwards. Even though they didn't quite say it, I think they all on some level felt when we had to have our best game, we didn't.
Yeah, yeah. You know, one of the things that I wondered last night while I was watching, we so heavily outshot them in that first period. And you've already talked about the incredible night that Binnington had as the rookie goalie for the Blues. But is it normal to have that kind of an imbalance in shots on goal and come out behind at the end of a period like that?
Well, I always find, you know, they always talk about puck luck in hockey. And you know, I mean, listen, nothing is normal in a game seven of the Stanley Cup final. But no, you would think that if you are out shooting, you know, the opposing team, if you're putting that much pressure on a rookie goalie, and don't forget, this was a goalie who, you know, when he had pressure put on him, I believe it was game five, was pulled from, you know, the game. And so, you know, you would think that he would crack a little bit, just a little bit.
Right,
that
you'd
find
point.
Some weakness at some point. But, you know, normal, not normal, who's for us to say? But yeah. It was certainly kind of got you thinking, this is not the Bruins' night.
Yeah, so you were in the locker room afterward, and we've heard that they didn't think it was their night either. Tell us what you heard from the players.
Just a lot of devastation. Absolute devastation. I think one of the players that really stuck in my mind was Matt Grzelcyk. We all know him. He's a kid brought up in Charlestown, grew up a Bruins fan. He missed four games because he, you know, suffered a concussion from a hit from behind. And he just talked after the game about how difficult it was to miss those four games and how special this team was. And here's what he said.
Probably the worst thing as a player is having to sit and watch. Not being able to go out there and battle with the guys, so just kind of a lot of things going through my head right now. It's really tough.
you can hear the pain there.
Yeah, and you could hear it and you could see it. I mean, Brad Marchand, red eyes, looked like he'd been crying. You know, Patrice Bergeron, tough time talking. All of them had a tough time putting their thoughts together.
Yeah, it's a passionate team, and it's a heartbreaking loss. We've got just a few seconds left. I do want to ask you, how do the Bruins move forward after this? Is there another shot next year? You know, what comes next?
Yeah. I mean, listen, if you're making it to the Stanley Cup Final, you've got you do have a shot, of course, next year. And hey, look, the Blues were the worst team in January in the NHL, and their Stanley Cup Stanley Cup chance. So I think the point is there. You always have a chance, but they have a good group of veterans, and then as we've seen throughout the playoffs, Matt Grzelcyk is part of this younger core. They have a real good younger core too coming up. So I think the combination of both. You know, next year, maybe the next couple years, they'll be in the mix for a Stanley Cup final. But I think they're all cognizant of the fact that this kind of opportunity doesn't come along often.
Yeah, well, there is some hope there, though. WBUR Sports and Society reporter Shira Springer, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.